Welcome to the Bear With Me podcast on Table Radio, where we aim to integrate belief and practice in the Christian life. What time is it? Good morning. It's still morning.
Yeah.
Good morning. We sometimes record at different times, so yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to start, actually. Yeah,
or I could start.
Well, I wanted to start by asking you a question we sometimes ask at the end.
Oh, right. The thing we just talked about.
Yeah.
I remember now.
What is something lately that has been a consolation?
Sunshine.
Is that really your answer?
Yeah. Have I shared this before?
No.
Because I was talking about it before, but I can't remember when.
No.
Sunshine.
That is.
There's been so much sun, like in the last few weeks.
You're so right.
And it's been warmer.
Yeah.
And it's like every other day, I feel like, oh, this is the new warm. This is the new high for the year so far.
Yeah, you're right.
And I am not a spring person. I'm a fall and then a summer person.
Oh, okay.
Autumn. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. I barely noticed the spring, much to the chagrin. Can I say that word?
Yes.
Of my wife.
I think spring is
her, maybe her favorite.
Yeah.
It competes with summer. But this year, I think maybe it's the pandemic and all the lockdown stuff, but just the sun outside and the warmth has been...
Yeah, that's a good one.
I'm just ready for it.
It's easy to take for granted because it's just there, but it really made such a difference this long weekend.
Yeah.
The sun.
Yeah.
Yeah, brightened everything.
Right.
Good one.
Yeah.
I thought you were joking, but you're serious.
No, the sun.
That is.
The sun's been so nice.
Yeah.
And long weekend. So we're recording this on the Wednesday after
Easter Wednesday.
Easter long weekend, but people aren't going to hear it. We've just been, we just brainstormed our schedule last week, and this won't come out for May.
Yeah, something like that.
So sorry about that disorientation, everybody.
Yeah.
But we just got so many good things to talk about.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay. The sun. So mine was the sun.
Great one.
So probably by in May, it's probably gonna be like raining for like 2 weeks. People are like, what is he talking about?
Totally. Okay. Mine that I thought of is that the last two nights I've had group spiritual direction groups with people at the table.
Oh yeah.
And
you like doing that.
Yeah. They're so good. There's like something magical about they're on Zoom. And it's just a very structured way of listening to one person share uninterrupted for 5 to 10 minutes on a topic, like with a, you know, give them a question and they answer it. And then it's a very structured way of responding to them. So we go in these movements like, okay, repeat back words you heard. Show them any gestures they did or any physical expressions or emotion that they had. Okay, now share what you noticed about their sharing, any themes. Mm-hmm. Okay, offer them something that touched you about their sharing. Everyone goes, okay, offer them an invitation or a wondering maybe from God about that they can take away and explore with. So it's like a half an hour structured time to listen to each person. We just did two at a time the last two nights. And it's just so good. Mm-hmm. Like you learn so much about the person and the person who shares just learns so much about themselves. And it just feels like the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Like there's four of us on, we're all tired. We're on Zoom. Like, what good's going to come of this? And yet, the whole just seems to be have this exponential quality to it, the impact and the takeaways. So it just is like a magical structure. And I loved both of them.
Sounds pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet the people in those are pretty great.
They're really great people. That's part of it.
Yeah. That helps.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Neat.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now we can take it away.
Okay, well, we're doing Great Commission Part 2.
Yes.
Or whatever we're going to, as you go, whatever we're calling it. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that usually comes later. But so last time we talked about the setting of discipleship and the thing, kind of big takeaways that I remember are the disorientation of disciples. Like that's a regular and normal part of discipleship is that there is a major incongruence between the world as we know it and the breaking in of God's world. Mm-hmm. And that's disorienting.
Yeah.
And so that should not be interpreted as unusual or as a disqualifier in any way to discipleship, but as a normal part of being a disciple. Mm-hmm. Not that it is all the time mm-hmm. that we need to go around always feeling disoriented. That's certainly not the disciples' experience, but to not be discouraged by that. Mm-hmm. Actually, that can be a point of encouragement of this. I should be experiencing some life. I'm really experiencing sort of the war of two kingdoms colliding, mm-hmm. then this is what I should, part of what I should be experiencing at some mm-hmm. point. That was one. You remember that?
Yeah.
And then two was the as you go. Like there was sort of these two, there is this outward impulse. I think we talked about that, of this is now open to all, not just Israel, because of the work of Jesus. This is now open to all the nations. So there is this outward impulse, but there's also the go part isn't the main verb. The main verb is make disciples. And the go is more of a as you are going about.
Yeah.
I think that's helpful for us because we might know people who have a sense of they were born to go somewhere else and mm-hmm. do this work. Mm-hmm. And so we might think, well, that disqualifies because I don't have that sense or I'm not doing that. But that's not a disqualifier. It's like, hey, as you're going to the store, would you mind also doing this? Hey, as you're going, to the gym.
Yeah.
You know, like Josh always goes to the gym.
Yeah.
Would you pick up this on the way? It's like, as you're going mm-hmm. about your life,
yeah,
do this thing. Mm-hmm. This is the main thing. And that's the thing we want to talk about today. We're going to cut into the meat and potatoes of the content of discipleship.
Nice.
So, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm excited too because you're doing this discipleship group. So you have some extra ideas.
Right. Yeah, I've been doing a discipleship group with some guys since January, mm-hmm. maybe end of January, and then teaching a discipleship class
right.
with another group of people on Monday evenings. And that'll be done by the time we upload this, but that's got a couple more classes left. And that's been great. That's been really fun.
Fun.
Yeah. So here we go.
Okay. Ready.
The what of discipleship. So the main verb, as I stated, isn't go somewhere, it's do something. Mm. And the main verb is make disciples. Mm. Make is the main thing. Disciples is the content. So we may have covered a little bit of this last time, but the what it means to be a disciple, mm-hmm. we can talk just a little bit about that.
Yeah.
And I think a helpful contemporary word, familiar word might be apprentice.
Yeah.
That kind of gets used in our setting a bit. And apprentice is nice because it's very hands-on, I think. I think of an apprentice maybe in the context of like crafting.
Yeah.
Wood, carpentry. Mm-hmm. Like an apprentice learning how to do something, which involves both knowledge and applied knowledge. Like doing something with your body and your mind together.
Yeah.
I think that's a helpful setting because that's definitely my understanding of Jesus' apprenticeship model mm-hmm. is, and the classroom is life, mm-hmm. not just this. So we can have these classes like I have on Zoom right now or this meeting with these guys for discipleship, which is also on Zoom once a week. But discipleship is really bigger than that. It's mm-hmm. like all of life. It's a lot of what we've been talking about on our Bear With Me podcast is how do we do that? What's the classroom of life for us? And how do we integrate what we believe with how we actually live and what we actually practice?
Yeah.
So it should be right up our alley.
Yeah.
At least in theory.
Theoretically.
And in practice.
Yes. So making disciples is making apprentices or having apprentices or living in such a way that someone could apprentice.
Yeah. And the apprenticeship is to Jesus mm-hmm. and it remains that way. Mm-hmm. So even if, like whether we're in spiritual direction or in, we're calling it a discipleship context, you might have somebody who has more experience and can teach you a lot of things, mm-hmm. and that you can imitate. But the real discipler is it's good to keep that clear.
Yeah.
So like I was thinking of, and I can't remember if I shared this last time or not, but when I was putting my discipleship group together, mm-hmm. I was thinking, who should I put together? I'm like, oh, Jesus spent all night on a mountain and prayed about it.
Yeah.
So should I go to Mount Tolmi all night and pray about it? And I didn't want to do that. But then I thought, oh, well, I'm not making disciples of Andy, so I don't need to do that. So maybe I'll just say, hey, Jesus, you're good at praying all night on mountains about who should follow you. So would you do that for me calling together this group of people?
Nice.
And then I asked 2 people and 3 people said yes.
Wow.
So that was kind of nice. Little indicator. training to be a pupil. So mm-hmm. in Jesus' day, rabbis, teachers had disciples. It was just a normal thing. Mm-hmm. And the disciples would seek out the rabbi and hope to and ask to be apprenticed or discipled by them. Hmm. And in Jesus' case, they're being trained for, his disciples are being trained for the kingdom of God, this inbreaking kingdom of God that was coming. It was even in their midst because it's tied to who Jesus is as the king, as they're with him. And for disciples, they're more than just a student, like we might think of a student with a professor or a teacher, because discipleship encompasses total allegiance to the master. You want to take on their mantle, their yoke of teaching, to be like them. And so you sought out and you thought very carefully about who your master would be. Because it made, you know, that's what you were going to do. And so we'll talk a bit more about that later when we get to the baptism bit. Cool. But I just wanted to reiterate what we said last time. He says, make disciples of all nations. Mm-hmm. And so this is significant because up until this point, the mission was really to Israel. So mm-hmm. during Jesus' lifetime before he died, not the lifetime after he died, but the lifetime before he died, it's just to Israel, the lost sheep of Israel. Mm-hmm. And that's the mission. Now that he's accomplished his work, which we did cover this last time, now that the keep out sign, so you think of the curtain in the temple that's keeping the presence of God from the people, is now torn.
That's cool. Open.
And so now there is a communion once again between God and humans.
Wow.
And so now that's connected to Jesus saying, now this is, you don't need to restrict your mission to Israel because now I've accomplished Israel's mission, which is to be a light to the nations, a priest to the nations surrounding. And now you are to go out and carry on that mission of bringing them into this family.
Wow. It just, listening to you describe it, it sounds kind of complicated for during Jesus's lifetime before he rose, for his mission to be primarily to the Jewish people. And then when he's about to leave in that same form, says, okay, go and make disciples of all nations when there's so many different cultures.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
like to give people the task of making disciples to the Jesus way when they grew up to something so different than the Hebrew law and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
That just seems like a kind of a tall order. That's my first instinct, kind of listening to it, like, whoa, what? He gave him like the hard part in a way.
Yes. Yes. Like,
right?
Like he's kind of weaseling out of it.
Yeah. Like, okay, go figure that out.
I like that. Yeah, that's
but
good.
Now it makes sense thinking about all, not all, but they got into all these little fights about what if you're circumcised or not, or do we eat this or do we not? Or,
yeah, and a lot of that gets worked out in Acts. You see it in the letters of Paul at the very least, working out difference between Jew and Gentile. That'd be a very big thing.
Yeah.
And to claim that Jesus did something and accomplished something that could break down that barrier.
Yeah.
It is a tall order. It's an impossible order. And so it's either he has the power and the presence to go with his disciples, which are both present here. He's promising these things so that they can accomplish their work. Otherwise, not going to happen.
Yeah. Now that seems really necessary.
Very necessary, yeah. So in a way, he's not weaseling out. He's like, well, yes. I'm going to go with you.
Yeah, and give you a helper.
I'll be present with you. So we'll get to that point too. I will be with you all the days. This is the literal Greek translation, which is kind of a nice way to say it. So now there are no barriers to the gospel,
okay,
to this news, to the kingdom of God. It's now breaking into the kingdom of God will become the kingdom of this world.
You know, God will become the kingdom of this world.
Like the whole thing, not just Israel, not just a part of it, but the whole thing. So it's the view by the time you get to the last book of the Bible, that's kind of the vision that John will paint for us, right? So no barriers to God except individual or personal stubbornness and resistance.
Okay.
So there's no forcing. God's not forcing us into his kingdom, but the invitation is now open to all the nations. So you might ask, why the wait? And I think that's a lot of what the Gospels are about. Jesus comes and finds that Israel's not ready to be a light to the nations, as they were called back way back in Exodus 20. Right at the receiving of the law, you will be a light to the other nations. That's your vocation. That's your calling. And then you read through the old story and how they fail and they fail and they don't trust and they fail to be a light to the nations. And then the incarnation, God becomes human in Jesus and fulfills that vocation fully and completely. And so now, in Jesus, the glory of God gets fully revealed, and the work of God gets fully accomplished. These are all big, big theology ideas that we don't have time to jump into here, maybe another time, but they're just there to kind of set up the significance of why now, why at the end of Matthew 28 are we going from just Israel to all the nations, right? And then you get Book of Acts, and then Paul's missionary journeys, he's trying to go to the ends of the earth, right? So how do we make disciples? It's right here, thankfully, so we don't have to make it up.
Great.
We make them, Jesus says, we make them by baptizing them. So then here comes another little question. Are we then, unless we're ordained, depending on what tradition we're a part of or what denomination, then are we disqualified from this part of making disciples?
Yeah, because I've never...
You haven't baptized anybody?
I haven't baptized anybody, no. Is that the first thing it says?
Make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. And then there's the second thing, teaching them everything I've commanded you.
Okay, so I've never really thought about this. The fact that I do kind of skip over that point, that part, since I'm not a baptizer.
Yeah.
But I've heard it in terms of the church's mission.
Right, so there's kind of that holistic, like we as the church baptize, we celebrate with, we're part of the baptism of believers.
Yeah.
Both by being baptized ourselves and then by baptism is meant to be a public event.
Yeah.
Right, it's because it's a symbol of much bigger and much deeper things of invisible realities that we can't see. It's this outward visible symbol. And so part of it is entrance into the church or the God's people or disciples or the family of God. And the term literally means to immerse or to be immersed.
Cool.
And so when we think about what the symbol is, it's a complete reorientation of one, of a one's life around, in this case, a person. So we think of, like when I grew up in the States, in grade school, we would start every day standing up, facing the flag. Did you do this
yep.
when you were a kid?
Yep.
You, hand over heart. Your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. No idea what I was doing as a grade three.
I totally forgot that was part of our...
But I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it well. I was pledging allegiance to a flag.
Yeah.
This is pledging allegiance to a person, three persons in this case, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things there. And this gets back to what a disciple is in the case of being a disciple of Jesus, is that we're reorienting our whole life, we're immersing our whole life into this kingdom that has this king mm-hmm. at the head of it.
Mm-hmm.
A complete reorientation of one's life around a person.
Hmm.
And so you think of the symbols of baptism, whether it's getting water poured over your head or whether mm-hmm. you're in a river or in Cadboro Bay mm-hmm. and going fully underneath and then coming back up again. So there's a death to something that you were primarily had an allegiance to, your old life,
mm-hmm.
whatever that was, yourself, all these other means of salvation or meaningfulness or enoughness.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, I am now reorienting all of that to this person or to these three persons in one, the three in one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Father, Son, and Spirit, alive to this new life. So you go down and then you come up out of the waters, a new creation is the image that it's pointing to, or the reality that the image is pointing to.
I do love that. Sorry, were you just...
Yeah, no, go for it.
I do love that the first thing is a ritual, you know, like mm-hmm. make disciples, baptizing them, which is another way of saying what you have been saying. Do a ritual that symbolizes
yeah.
or enacts a marker of some change that's happening or some mm-hmm. desire or yeah, some kind of initiation
yeah.
into something. Like a rite of passage, I think of for those cultures or traditions that, you know, mark the change from adolescence to adulthood in some mm-hmm. way. And it's encouraging for me to think that Jesus and God know how important rituals are for us.
Yeah.
Because I didn't grow up with a ton of kind of obvious ones, but the older I've gotten and the harder life gets as well, and the more pain there is, the more loss there is, the more we learn, it just does feel so helpful to have public in some sort of way, whether it's a small group or something,
yeah.
public displays of change
yeah.
or of desire of some sort.
Yeah.
So it reminds me of somebody, I think it was Josh talking about how matter matters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. it's like our body matters. Going under the water matters. Some people get a tattoo to symbolize something.
Right.
Rings can matter. Mm-hmm. Names matter. You know, there's these symbols that it's very, I don't know the word. Not encouraging, but it just makes me feel kind of inspired and excited to think that Jesus is saying, oh, this isn't just you assent to believing a set of things or you become really educated
yes.
theologians or biblical scholars or
yes.
something.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing I'm going to say that you do is you have people do something.
And that first thing is you give your total allegiance to me as your king. It's a big one, huh?
It's kind of big.
Yeah. And the claim is because I'm good enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the good king.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a challenge for us. That's, mm-hmm. that's living in a time and place where power and authority is suspect
mm-hmm.
and rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got, and we're already breaking into the next part here,
okay.
but we've got the gospels, these testimonies, these eyewitness testimonies of the disciples that were with Jesus in the flesh saying, this is what happened. Here's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to see the works of Jesus and the word, hear the words of Jesus, and allow that to, or at least the invitation to be immersed in those things and see the good King that we are called to follow and pledge our allegiance to. And we get the benefits and the cost that goes with that, which is the work of discipleship. Of working out what are those things and how do I follow on the way. So this immersion, this total way of life, our belief and practice, is that there's a super practical element to this, that we can be baptized. That's something tangible that can happen. So whether that's already happened or whether that's something that has not happened yet, this is a calling to total allegiance. And this is how Jesus has set it up in the church for you to say, for you to stand up, raise your hand and say, yes, that's me. I'm going to publicly announce that I am following this one to death and beyond, which we'll get to later. In a later discipleship text. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's not just the ordained pastor who gets to baptize, like do the actual physical work of baptizing. Mm-hmm. It's also a calling for all of us to remember and live out of our own baptism.
Right.
And to participate in calling other people to that same total allegiance, same total immersion. And so you think of the larger thing that baptism symbolizes is something we can all participate in, both in our own lives and in the encouraging and calling others to this same life. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, we're not exempt from it or we're not disqualified. We get to participate in it.
Yeah.
And that leads us to the second part.
Great.
Which is, so the first one is baptizing them. That's the first way of making disciples, is calling people to this allegiance. And it leads to then teach them everything that I've commanded you. So there's a logical order to that, right?
Huh, interesting.
Like it doesn't make sense to call people to submission to the commandments of this king if they don't recognize the authority and legitimacy of the king. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So why would, so trying to legislate, say, our Christian morality or what Jesus says to do to others who don't recognize Jesus as king.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense.
Right.
And that, right?
Yeah.
So it's not, not opening up the Bible with people and saying, hey, this is who Jesus is, like definitely that part. But to expect obedience or trust when there isn't an overall orientation of, oh, wow, I am going to reorient my life around this person. Mm-hmm. Okay, once that decision is made, then there is like, okay, well, here's everything that he commanded. And here's how, let's figure this out together.
Well, what surprises me is that the teaching doesn't come first, because I might think the order was teach people everything I've commanded. If they're like good for it or in for it, baptize them.
Yeah.
But so for the baptism to come first and then the teaching to come about everything that I've commanded you.
Yeah. I wonder if the emphasis is more on the command and trusting obedience and submission.
Yeah.
This is my king. So not so much, I mean, obviously Jesus is going around proclaiming the kingdom of God to everybody.
Yeah.
He's telling the stories to everybody. And so I think there is that element of, well, they got to know who the good king is before they can submit or make this like, oh yeah, total allegiance thing. So I don't think it's negating that type of thing. But in terms of the thrust of, okay, well, here's what he commanded us to, this is what life looks like in living in Jesus' kingdom, in living out the kingdom life, I guess.
Cool.
I think that I'm trying to decide in two ways to go here.
Okay, yeah.
What are you thinking about? Maybe that'll help me decide.
Oh, okay, I was thinking about what it kind of that practical side.
Yeah.
Like what it means to remember our baptism when you said that, kind of living out of this memory of our baptism. And then just the, what is the word? Validation this text gives to all the teaching and learning that is part of discipleship. Like it just made me feel good because I love learning. I love listening and reading and watching people, and I love learning. And it just sounds like there's a real valid place for that.
Yeah.
In an ongoing way.
Yeah.
In the life as a disciple.
Yeah. If you've been baptized, think of people renewing their vows, for example.
Yeah.
Why do they do that? What's the significance of that? To remember, to celebrate anew, to remember the original words that you said and say them again, and all that it symbolizes and signifies. And I sometimes tell people that a good practice could be going through the baptism liturgy. Mm. And if you don't remember the, you know, if you don't have a copy of what it exactly was, they're largely, you know, the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
You can find, you know, a book of prayer from a lot of different denominations will have it. So that'd be a great prayer meditation or reflection or practice to say, this is still true. And I can renew my baptism vows anytime I want to.
Yeah, I love that. It also
and it's pretty rich. Like I'm thinking about the Anglican Book of Common Prayer.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty robust language. So there's a lot of meat in there to kind of like a lot of images like, oh, wow. And things that might surprise you. Like, oh, I don't remember that part.
Well, you just made me think about rereading my wedding vows.
Yeah.
You know, in that ceremony and just, which I have done, you know, in the past, we've been married for 16 years. So when I heard it and when we wrote them 16 years ago, they mean so much more now.
Right. So they might like, okay, that's when I say this, that takes on a bit more nuanced meaning, a particular meaning because of this history. And there's no reason that would be different. I mean, that should be exactly the same for a baptismal vows.
Yeah.
If we're really engaged in this life of discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's good.
It also just made me think about water, just because I have been doing the cold plunges again. And
you've gone back.
Yeah, gone back.
Wow.
Reconverted. On Easter morning, I was in the water at Willows, and that whole group of oddballs was there, the group of people that go every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I do go underneath the water when I go in to this cold water. Instead, some people just kind of sit there, which is cool. But for me, part of the whole benefit of it is the immersion and then the coming up and being, you know, fully wet. And I heard that some people are getting cold tubs for their house, you know, instead of hot tubs, which I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me, because the whole point of doing this is kind of for me, feeling like I'm part of the world. Like when you go under in the ocean and you're looking up at Mount Baker and the sun or the water, you feel like you're part of creation. Yeah.
This is a really great example, because one of the questions that might be raised through us talking about this is calling other people to the same allegiance. Like, wow, that sounds hard, intimidating, especially in the time and place that we live in. But I was just about to ask you, if someone asked you, why do you do cold water swimming?
Yeah.
You would be able to give an answer.
Oh, yeah.
That may or may not be compelling to people.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter. What is important and helpful about it is, what is compelling about it to you? Why do you do this crazy, ridiculous thing?
Yeah.
And a lot of people could ask the same thing about, why are you getting baptized? Or why did you get baptized? Or why are you a Christian?
Yeah.
And we might not hear those questions a lot, because a lot of people just might not care, or religion is just too private thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it does, every once in a while, it does get asked.
Yeah.
And it could be a really good exercise to think through, to spend an afternoon thinking through, How would I answer that honestly to people?
Yeah, I did bring that as one of the practical examples that we can link in the show notes.
Yeah.
Is some more current testimony creation. You know, because we can tend to think of testimony as like a one-time story about when you did drugs and then you found God or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Like you're supposed to do drugs in order to find God is sort of the implication.
To have a good conversion. So I don't know where I found these, but we've done these at the table, I think at a retreat in the past.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just some kind of fill-in-the-blank prompts that refreshes, it kind of refreshes the account for the hope that is in you.
That's
things
good.
Like, I've come to experience God as blank. The most significant difference that Christ has made in my life lately is blank. You know, and filling those in and going through those periodically just to kind of reorient ourselves. It is a way of remembering our baptism and being ready for some relevant, thoughtful responding to people who are asking it directly or not.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because very few people ask it directly.
Right.
But there's a lot of relating in the world. And people are curious about where your meaning comes
from. People do get curious. And the more they get comfortable with you, the more they might feel free to say, hey, just what is that?
Mm-hmm.
It happens. It might happen to me more often because of my job.
I think so, yeah.
role. And so sometimes in some ways an easier way, even though other things are harder. But I wrote down, I just forced myself to write down one example of how I might articulate it.
Yeah.
Really short.
You just did it now?
No, this is...
Oh, great.
Yeah, this was before. This is actually in preparation for the class. So I had just jotted down, I'm convinced that there's more to reality than what we can see or measure.
Mm-hmm.
And the scriptures let us in to that reality in a way that I have found reliable and convincing.
Hmm.
It's a real short and simple way that might invite further conversation. Like, if you're... But I'd love to talk about it sometime if you want to go out for coffee.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing, right?
Yeah, it's so
because
cool.
People might just be asking and not want to hear like your 30-minute treatise.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think that we can get a little bit like, oh no, this is my one opportunity.
Right.
Now I have to tell the whole gospel. Like, well, you could just do like a little teaser and say, oh yeah, great question. Here's, you know, here's a little, real simple way, a little teaser. There's a lot more to it. Would love to chat with you sometime.
Yeah.
And then you kind of open the door there a bit for more conversation or not, depending on their interest.
It's reminding me that it kind of goes hand in hand with a sense of vocation or mission statement or however you want to say that. Like I'm thinking about the creative engagement stuff we've been talking about and how only lately in the last couple of years, I do have a sense of what my purpose is in the world as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it remains the same or intact, regardless of whether I'm being a parent or a friend or doing emails, like this bigger sense of purpose. And it feels like those go hand in hand a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fun. Mm-hmm. It'd be great to spend time doing what you did and kind of articulating a current teaser.
Yeah. I can have fun with it.
Yeah.
Because it's not like you can kind of say... Instead of getting stuck in the what am I supposed to say?
Yeah.
Just try, but what do I really like?
Yeah.
Why am I here?
Yeah.
It's important just to answer for yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So that's the first one, baptism. Second one is then teaching them everything I've commanded you.
Yeah.
This is the kind of the more hands-on apprenticing.
Is approach. There more after this?
No.
Those are the two things?
The two things.
Wow. Okay.
A simple. Two things.
Okay. Just
baptize and teach them everything. That's all. That's all you do. So we've got four accounts of Jesus apprenticing people.
Yeah.
It's really helpful.
Yeah.
It's really rich.
Yeah.
They all are different. Three of them are very similar, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. A lot of overlapping stories, but they all kind of have their little different lens or take on it.
Yeah.
And then John's very different.
Cool.
Right? And so that's kind of fun. But those four accounts are all discipleship texts. They're discipleship manuals. Hmm. And they're really rich, and they're really great spaces to dive into and really focus on. Does Jesus still say and do the same things today as he did with those disciples then? And I think a lot of times the answer is yes. Yes, he does. And he's calling us to the same thing, or he's doing the same thing with us. Mm-hmm. And I think once we can kind of enter into that imaginative space and sort of figure out how to bridge the distance between those discipleship moments and our discipleship experience or moment or engagement, mm-hmm. then there's a lot of richness that comes out of it, and a lot of practical, like, okay, I think I understand a bit more, or I think I'm seeing a bit more clearly. And that can be a lot of fun. Hmm. There's more than just those four accounts. Mm-hmm. I think it can be argued that the New Testament letters are all discipleship texts, discipleship manuals in different ways.
Yeah.
Some of them very particular and practical to particular situations. Sometimes they're really helpful because while sometimes it feels like, oh, that's not my situation at all, other times I'm like, ooh, that's so particular to this situation that it's like you get kind of a texture of it and the sense of it mm-hmm. in a very practical way. And some of the letters, so I'm thinking like 1 Corinthians there, very mm-hmm. particular situation. Mm-hmm. Or you got Ephesians and Colossians, which seems very general, like just going out to a lot of people, mm-hmm. not super particular, but here is how to be a disciple. Mm-hmm. That's a way of understanding the letters. And I think you can make the argument that the Old Testament books are discipleship manuals in their own ways. Mm-hmm. If Jesus can point to the old story, the Old Testament books, and say, these are testifying to me, then there is a connection there for having seeing those as discipleship texts in their own ways as well. But I'm going to propose that we dive into some of the Gospels and discipleship moments going forward from here. This is kind of our first one. This is part two of the end of Matthew. We kind of begin at the end of the story to kind of get the whole view of it. This is what discipleship is. So let's jump into some of those texts going forward and just, you know, try them out. Press on them. What does it mean to be a disciple? What does it look like here? Looking at the original 12 and saying, is some of this for us, and how do we engage it?
Like it.
I think that rooting ourselves in these texts is really helpful to learning how to trust and to see and to hear Jesus in our lives. Mm-hmm. It's like we talked about Gordon Smith and the voice of Jesus. Mm-hmm. It's like he asks the question, what do I think Jesus is speaking to me in light of what's happening in the world around me, mm-hmm. the events in my life, what people are speaking to me? But he's very careful to say, to tie that to, if you want to be able to distinguish between the voice of Jesus and the voice of your mother-in-law, which seems like an important distinction, or the voice of Vanessa or mm-hmm. Andy in your own head, mm-hmm. or the voice of the culture, or whatever you're listening to, if you want to be able to distinguish, you better learn what Jesus sounds like. Mm-hmm. I think it's really helpful to root ourselves in the gospel stories, in the discipleship stories, so that we say, oh yeah, that sounds like, I know it was my voice in my head, or I know mm-hmm. it was my mother-in-law on the phone, or my wife, or my roommate, or whoever it was, but it sounds like that was also what, it also sounded like Jesus' voice to me.
Yeah.
And learning how to do that well,
I
think that's practically how we learn to do discipleship and learn to hear the voice of Jesus in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a whole topic of discernment, learning to hear and notice the voice of Jesus and the movements of God and distinguish them from other things.
Yeah. So I think this will be fun. Mm-hmm. And we'll start to kind of try to do some of that together on our show.
Yeah, doing it live in
little,
a way.
A little discipleship series, sub-series.
Yeah.
And try it with an eye towards practical mm-hmm. and practice and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Sound good?
Yeah, it sounds fun.
I've found in my own life, when I do this mm-hmm. and I make a habit out of it, of rooting in the texts of the Bible.
Yeah.
And specifically maybe the Gospels and some of these discipleship texts, is that I grow in my conviction of what's true and what's real. Mm-hmm. And in part because of that conviction of what I think is actually real and reliable, I grow in confidence. And part of that is a confidence in the King, in the reality of Jesus and his presence and his power to do what he says he's going to do, and that he's with us. And then growing in peace. That he's doing the work that I can't do. Mm-hmm. That the work that, because I can't do it, I often don't feel enough or good enough. Pretty common feeling for a lot of us. But the more I learn who Jesus is and to trust him in his goodness and his presence, the more I learn to, I don't need to accomplish those things, that he can accomplish those things in the process of discipleship.
Yeah.
So I think in part of the fruit of discipleship is growing in conviction, confidence, and peace around
that's cool.
who Jesus is in the lives that we're living. Which leads me to our final note.
Yeah.
That in the midst of all this, he says, I am with you all the days until the very end of this age. Till it's all accomplished, I think is what is meant. And so you have that promise of presence.
Wow. I kind of just want to get into it and like take a story and see what it means.
Yeah, I think we'll do that next time.
Okay.
I think we're going to do, we're going to go to Gospel of Luke chapter 6.
Oh, which one is that?
That's the one where Jesus prays all night on Mount Tolmi.
Yeah.
And calls 12.
Yeah.
So he's already got disciples, but he calls 12 to be with him. It's a very short passage. It's half the passage is naming all the disciples,
right?
Which we don't need to spend a lot of time on, but there is some interesting things there too, because it seems like there's a lot of Simons and a lot of Judases.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's distinct, and a lot of Marys, right? Uh-huh. So you got to kind of distinguish between all of them. But making margins for mountains is as an aspect of discipleship.
Love it.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
We often only know his presence as we go. So as we trust, as we start to lean, you know the reliability of a chair when you sit on it. It's not a good example because we usually don't think about that.
No, I like it though.
But learning to trust through concrete actions of obedience in response to what Jesus is saying leads to experiences where we know his presence and his power. Anything else? Final words?
I don't think so. I guess I do have one. Something that kind of captured my imagination is just talking about discipleship and immersion, baptism as immersion, and kind of this whole life shift. It reminded me of this Orthodox priest who said to pray is to follow, meaning to pray is to follow Jesus in all directions, in all ways of life. Like, it's not to just come on Sundays or go to the temple or whatever and do your thing. That to be a disciple is to go where Jesus went. For the disciples then, it would be watching how Jesus eats his food, how he decides where he's going to sleep that night, when it's time to leave a city, how he talks to people, when he doesn't talk to people. Like, that part kind of captures my imagination, just the whole life part of it, not just the quote unquote spiritual parts, like the worship part, the morality part, stuff like that, the prayer, the disciplines, or the traditional disciplines, but just the living life part. And that in the last decade of life has really brought my faith alive, has been recognizing that there's this affects my whole life. The way I treat people, the way I wake up in the morning, the way I eat, how I choose to spend my time, where I go, what I spend on, you know, the like all in nature of it just feels really exciting. And it feels like there's no end to learning.
Yeah.
Like there's so much to learn about it all. We will never arrive because there's more arenas to apply this to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Do we press stop?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time for round three.
I think it will be.
Little discipleship series.
Cool.
Okay. Bye.